Good morning, everyone. We stopped last time on page 192, near the middle of the page, line 695. Something was seen at last that looked like truth. So we'll go on from there today. We are reading in book two, the book of the Traveler of the Worlds, Canto 6, Kingdoms and Godheads of the Greater Life. This is quite a long canto. It has six sections. Now we're reading in the fifth section. And I'd like to look back just to the last sentence on the bottom of page 191. As for Pati seeing the mystery of life, ever he felt near a spirit in her forms, in the forms of life. Its passive presence was her nature's strength. It's a hint of the idea of Purusha always supporting the action of Prakriti. Passive, but sanctioning, supporting. And he says, this soul is real in apparent things, all those appearances of life. Even upon earth, the spirit is life's key, but her solid outsides nowhere bear its trace. This is our difficulty. Life's visage hides life's real sight from self from sight. Life's secret sense, its secret meaning, is written within, above. That's our problem. But for Asvapati now in his exploration, line 695, something was seen at last that looked like truth. It's a whole new development in Asvapati's exploration of this realm. Again, would you begin?
In a half-lit air of hazardous mystery, the eye that looks at the dark half of truth made out an image amid the vivid blur, and peering through the mist of subtle winds, he saw a half-blind, chained divinity, bewildered by the world in which he moved, yet conscious of some light prompting his soul, attracted to strange, far-off shimmerings, led by the fluting of a distant player. He sought his way amid life's laughter and call, and the index chaos of her myriad steps towards some total deep infinity.
Thank you. This is quite mysterious, no? Who is this half-blind, chained divinity? Perhaps this is the conscious being at this level of development, bewildered by the world in which he moved, but conscious of some light prompting his soul. So he's attracted to far-off shimmerings of light, and he hears the fluting of a distant player. Makes us think of Lord Krishna alluring us with playing his flute in the forest. That being is looking for his way amid the laughter and call of life and the index chaos of her myriad steps. Life does so many things and moves in so many different ways. Maybe these are indications, maybe there are hints, but they are absolutely chaotic. It's very difficult to follow them, but the being is trying to follow towards some total deep infinitude. Yes?
Still can't get index chaos.
Well, an index is where you look to find something in a big volume. And usually people who make indexes are very careful to put them in an order so that you can find what you want. But apparently in life it is not like that. The index, all the indications are there, all the references, but they're all mixed up. So difficult for the soul to find its way. Does that make sense to you, Don?
No, I will take it.
I have a question.
Yes.
In the lines previous, we read about we only see the outside of things, not the real truth. And then he starts the section, the eye that looks at the dark country. Suddenly I'm saying, oh, but that's the eye that sees that, but then there's another eye. So it's a very delicious kind of choice or possibility of meaning here for me.
Well, we here following Aswapati, and he is the one who, in all this exploration, begins to see at last something that looked like truth. And he's using the eye that can see even the dark side of truth. And using that eye, he sees an image in the midst of all this brightly colored blur of life. He peers through this mist of colors, subtle tints. He sees this being, half blind, chained, a divine being. So I'm just hazarding the possibility that this is the evolving being at this level of evolution, of the greater life, trying to find a way through all this chaos of the signs of life.
This index thing, it has another meaning.
Yes, Naren.
Like this distant fruit and light which he's seeking is an index of for the chaos. Those symbolings are the chaos which is life. Some index of
Well, at least that's what he's following. He's decided to follow those signs. Yeah.
Human being, the index is the light, so distant light and sound.
Yes.
And
yes.
There are some indication for the light for us.
Yes.
That can be another meaning.
Yes. Or another aspect of the meaning of this phrase. Yes. Thank you, Naren.
Wilder than the conscious attractive leg, it has to keep or have blind ability.
Actually, it's rather difficult to say here, no? When it says led by the fluting of a distant player, it seems to be that half-blind chained divinity. But I'm not absolutely sure that it's not Aswapati himself. Perhaps if we read further, it'll become clearer. It seems to refer to that half-blind, chained divinity. Yes, please.
Around clouded forest of her signs, at hazard he read by arrow leaves of thought, but hit the mark by guess or luminous chance, her changing colored road lights of idea, and her signals of uncertain swift event, the hieroglyphs of her symbol pageantries, and her landmarks in the tangled paths of time. In her mazes of approach and of retreat, to every side she draws him and repels, but drawn too near escapes from his embrace. All ways she leaves him, but no way is sure.
Thank you. So here it seems to be clear that this refers to that divinity, seeking his way amid life's laughter and call. So at hazard, just randomly, he reads by arrow leaps of thought. A thought is like an arrow shot, and they hit the mark by guess or by luminous chance. So he's able to read something of life's changing colored road lights of idea and her signals of uncertain swift event. The hieroglyphs, it's a language that is very difficult to read, no? The hieroglyphs of life's symbol pageantries, all this display that life makes in front of us, they have a meaning, her landmark in the tangled paths of time. But the ways that she's leading him are through mazes, labyrinth, and they draw near to something and then he's led further away. So she draws him this way and that way, and whichever way he goes, she pushes him back. And when he gets too near, she escapes. All ways she leads him, but no way is sure. This is the being, I think. Don, would you read?
Allured by the many-timed marvel of her chant, attracted by the witchcraft of her moods, and moved by her casual touch to joy and grief, he loses himself in that, but wins her not. A fugitive paradise smiles at him from her eyes. He dreams of her beauty, named forever his. He dreams of his mastery, her limbs shall bear. He dreams of the magic of her breasts of bliss. In her illumined script, her fanciful translation of God's pure original text, he thinks to read the scripture wonder, hieratic key, unknown beatitude. But the word of life is hidden in its script. The chant of life has lost its divine note.
Thank you. Life makes promises to us, no? Fugitive paradise smiles at him from her eyes. He dreams of all kinds of wonderful things, and he thinks that she's going to give him some illumination. He thinks that in life he'll be able to find the scripture wonderful, the hieratic key, the secret priestly key to unknown beatitudes, forms of delight. But life lets us down. The word of life is hidden in its script. We can't find the meaning. The chant of life has lost its divine note. So the being, the spirit, goes on wandering. Varadarajan.
Unseen, a captive in a house of sound, the spirit lost in the splendor of your reign, risen to a thousand voices, illusions, woes. A delicate gift of sorcery steals the heart's. For a fiery magic kings the stones and fruits, yet they but wake a thrill of transient grief. A vagrant moth struck by the wanderer time, they call to a brief unsatisfied desire, or wallow in ravishment of mind and sense, but miss the luminous answer of the soul. A blind heartthrob that reaches joy to tears. The yearning to her speaks forever unreached, an ecstasy of unfulfilled desire. That's the last wonder claiming of the world.
So poignant, these lines, no? A blind heart throb that reaches joy through tears. A yearning towards peaks forever unreached. An ecstasy of unfulfilled desire track the last heavenward climbings of her voice. Life leads us maybe higher and higher, especially this greater life, but the fulfillment is not there, however high she leads us. Fanny, you would read?
Transmuted a past-talking memory into a lonely, sadness, weak, escaping tray. Turned are her tears to gems of diamond pain. Her sorrow into a magic canvas. Grief on her snatches of pennies that touch the surface. Then escape or die. A lost remembrance echoes in her depths. A deathless longing stirs, a veiled self's call, a prisoner in the mortal's limiting rules, a spirit wounded by life, sobs in her breast, a cherished suffering is her deepest cry, a wanderer on forlorn despairing woods, along the roads of sound of frustrating voice, forsaken cries to a forgotten bliss, astray in the equal cavern of desire, if guard the phantoms of the soul's dead hopes and keeps alive the voice of perished things, or lingers upon sweet and errant notes, hunting for pleasure in the heart of pain.
Thank you. Yes.
Like life is teasing the soul.
Teasing the soul, yes.
So no wonder why the spiritual seekers abandon the life.
They turn away from life, yes. They feel it's impossible and they can't deal with it. And he speaks here of a house of sound. And it's as if we're hearing clues and moving towards them, trying to find out what they mean. But we can neither escape from that house of sound, nor we can find out what it means. Jocelyn, would you read?
Before that, she done this lines.
Yes.
Transmitter of the past, suffering memories, and one old servant's sweet escaping trail.
Yes.
And turn into diamond.
Turn her tears to gems of diamond pain. You know, the sufferings that life inflicts on us, perhaps in some people who've risen to the greater life, they manage to turn them into beautiful songs or music or dramas, novels, yeah, some kinds of music. They're full of this diamond pain.
Not referring to the past life as such, before the pain.
It's certainly referring to the past, you know, the way that something in us, the spirit in us, transmutes past painful experiences into something worth remembering. We let Jocelyn go on. Yeah.
And as touch the cosmic force, and the inclusion with covered strength, covered with inner music, hidden teach that guides under the surface cadences. Then it is joy to live and to create, and joy to love and labor through all things, and joy to seek. So all we find deceives them, and all on which we lean betrays our trust. Yet, continuing its steps, what's worth the pain? Passionate memory haunts with ecstatic fire, even grief as joy to the religious world. So nothing is truly vain, the one has made, and our defeated heart, God's strength survives, and victory stands still light of this great world. Our death made a passage to new worlds.
Thank you. Again, it's about music, no? The cosmic chords, the universal music, whoever's playing that cosmic music. A fateful hand, a dark and dreadful hand has touched those cosmic chords, so that troubled strain, something that's disturbed, disturbing, has intruded and covered up the hidden key to that inner music, that hidden key that is, we don't hear it, but it is guiding all these surface cadences, what we hear and experience on the surface. There's that fateful hand, and Asvapati will have to explore further to find what it is that has brought in this troubled strain. But in spite of that, life is in a way irresistible. Yet is it joy to live and to create, and joy to love and labor all the work, even though everything fails. And there's a joy in the seeking, even though everything we find lets us down, deceives us, and everything that we rely on betrays our trust. Still, something in the depths of life was worth the pain. There's some kind of passionate memory is haunting us with an ecstatic fire. And we recognize that even grief has joy hidden beneath its root. He says this is because nothing is truly vain. Nothing is meaningless and useless that the One has made. Even when we feel absolutely defeated, distressed, God's strength survives in us, and the star of victory is still lighting our road. We have to go on following that desperate road because we are guided by that star of victory. Even our death, it's just a passage, a new entry to other worlds, new worlds. So it's this fact that gives to life's music that anthem swell, like somebody playing very, very complex and powerful music on a great organ. No? Margaret.
This life's music is its anthem swell. To all she lends the glory of her voice, heaven's rapturous whisper to her heart and past. Earth's transient yearnings cry from her lips and fade. Alone the God-given hymn escapes her heart that came with her from her spiritual home, but stopped halfway and failed. A silent word awaiting some response of waiting words. A murmur suspended in eternity's hush, but no breath comes from the supernal peace. A sumptuous inter-
So she sings and plays so wonderfully, so such compelling music. Only the God-given hymn escapes her art. She can't play that. And yet it was given to her by God. It came with her from her spiritual home, that home of eternal bliss that we read about way back in Canto 3. That stopped halfway and failed. Now it's there as a silent word. It's awake in some deep pause of waiting world, waiting for that hymn to be sung. It's just a murmur suspended in eternity's hush. It's there, but no breath comes from that supernal peace. A sumptuous interlude occupies the ear. What we are hearing is something that's played in between. It's not the real music, but it's that sumptuous. There's so much richness in it. The heart listens and the soul consents. That interlude is repeating evanescent music, not the true eternal hymn, no? It's wasting the eternity of time on transience, on things that quickly go tremolo. It is when the high voices repeat. Hello. Explain to us tremolo, please, Don. Yeah, like this. No, it's a sound like this. High voices. So a tremolo of the voices of the hours. As if all the hours are singing this high pitched, repeated note, but that's screening the high intended theme, which the self-embodying spirit came, embodied itself here in order to play that theme on the vast clavichord, the huge keyboard, like the keyboard of an organ, which nature force supplies. We don't hear that high intended theme. Only just occasionally a murmur here and there of that eternal word, of that blissful voice comes and reminds us of the strength and sweetness which we can no longer hear. Maybe that murmur of the blissful word or the touch of beauty, true beauty, transfiguring the heart and the scent. It comes like a wandering splendor. It doesn't stay long. It's a mystical that we can't respond to. These things remind us for a moment of the strength and sweetness that we can't hear any longer because the spirit or because that hymn has stopped halfway. It hasn't come down into our world yet. We haven't read the last section yet. So let's do that. Why doesn't it come down? Not time yet. But that's what Asvapati is trying to find out. Why doesn't it come? How can I make it come? What force or spirit can I find that will make the life on earth divine, not this unsatisfactory index chaos that it seems to be at the moment? Patricia?
Here is the gap. Here stops or sinks life's force. This deficit paupers the magician's skill. This want makes all the rest seem thin and bare. A half sight draws the horizon of her. Her depths remember what she came to do, but the mind has forgotten, for the heart mistakes. In nature's endless lines is lost the God. In knowledge to summon omniscience, in action to erect to create her creator here was her heart's conceit. To evade the cosmic scene with utter God, toiling to transform the still far absolute into an all-fulfilling epiphany, into an utterance of the ineffable, she would bring the glory here of the absolute source, change poise into creation's rhythmic swing, married sky of calm, a sea of fire to call eternity into time, make body's joy as vivid as the soul's. Earth she would lift to neighborhood with heaven, labors life to equate with
Here the half-god, the half-titan are her peak. This greater life wavers twixt earth and sky.
Thank you. Rita.
Fragment, paradox, pursues her dreams. Her hooded energy moves an ignorant world to look for a joy her own strong clasp would solve. In her embrace, it cannot turn to its source. Immense her power, endless her act's vast drive. Astray is its significance and loss. Although she carries in her secret breast the law and journey curve of all things born, her knowledge partial seems, her purpose small. On a soil of yearning tread her sumptuous hours. A laden nation weighs the wings of thought. Her power oppresses the being with its guards. Her actions prison its immortal gaze. A sense of limit haunts her masteries, and nowhere is issued content or peace. For all the depth and beauty of her work, a wisdom lacks that sets the spirits free. An old and faded charm had now her face, and fawned for him her quick and curious lore. His wide soul asked a deeper joy than hers.
Thank you, Poonam.
Out of her weathered lines he saw escape, but neither gate of home nor ivory he found, nor postern of spiritual sight. There was no issue from that dreamlike space. Our being must move eternally through time. Death helps us not. Vain is the hope to cease. A secret will compels us to endure. Our life's repose is in the infinite. It cannot end. Its end is life supreme. Death is a passage, not the goal of our walk. Some ancient, deep impulsion labors on. Our souls are dread as with a hidden leash. Carried from birth to birth, from world to world. Our acts prolong after the body's fall the old perpetual journey without pause. No silent peak is found where time can rest. This was a magic stream that reached no sea.
Thank you, Ravi.
However far he went, wherever turned, the wheel of earth ran within and outstripped.
Outstripped.
Always further tasks was left to do, a beat of actions and a cry of thoughts forever grew in that unquiet world. A busy murmur filled the heart of time. All was
contrivance.
And unceasing stare of hundred ways to be, where tried way of sameness that assumed a thousand forms, strove to escape from its long monotone and made new things that soon were like the world. A curious decoration lulled the eye, and novel values for which ancient things could cheat the mind with the idea of change. A different picture that was still the same appeared on the cosmic gray background, only another labyrinth house of creatures and their doings and events or seeking of trophy, or seeking of the trophy of born souls, a market of creation and the world was offered to the laboring mind and heart.
Thank you. Manoha.
The sacred ending where it first begins, if that the forward and eternal march of progress on perfection's unknown road. Each final scene leads to a sequel plan, yet every new batcher seems the last. Inspired imagination, theorists' ultimate peak, proclaiming a panacea for all time's ills, all carrying thought in its ultimate zenith flight and trumpeting supreme discovery. Each brief idea, a structure perishable, publishes the immortality of its dream. Its claim to be the perfect form of things. Truth's last epitome, time's golden best. But nothing has been achieved of its infinite world. A world made ever new, never complete. Five always half attempts or lost attempts. And so a fragment as the eternal whole.
Thank you.
In the aimless mounting total of things done, existence seemed a vain necessity's act, a wrestle of eternal opposites, in a clasped antagonism's close-locked embrace, a play without denouement or idea, a hunger march of lives without a goal, or, written on a bare blackboard of space, a futile and recurring sum of souls, a hope that failed, a light that never shone, the labor of an unaccomplished force, tied to its acts in a dim eternity. There is no end, or none can yet be seen. Although defeated, life must struggle on. Always she sees a crown she cannot grasp. Her eyes are fixed beyond her fallen state. There quivers still within her breast and ours a glory that was once and is no more. Or there calls to us from some unfulfilled beyond, a greatness yet unreached by the halting world.
In
a memory behind our mortal sense, a dream persists of larger, happier air, breathing around free hearts of joy and love, forgotten by us, immortal in lost time. The ghost of bliss pursues her haunted depth, for she remembers still, though now so far, her realm of golden ease and glad desire, and the beauty and strength and happiness that were hers. In the sweetness of her glowing paradise, in her kingdom of immortal ecstasy, halfway between this knowledge, in our hidden parts we keep, awake to vagaries appeal. We need a deep unseen reality, far truer than the world's face of present truth. We are chased by a self we cannot now recall, and moved by a spirit we must still become.
Thank you. Patty?
As one who has lost the kingdom of his soul, we look back to some God phase of our birth, other than this imperfect creature here, and hope in this or a diviner world to recover yet from heaven's patient guard what by our mind's forgetfulness we miss, our being's natural felicity, our heart's delight we have exchanged for grief, the body's thrill we barter for mere pain, the bliss for which our mortal nature yearns, as yearns an obscure moth to blazing light. Our life is a march to a victory never won. This wave of being longing for delight, this eager turmoil of unsatisfied strengths, these long, far files of forward-striving hopes, lift worshiping eyes to the blue void called heaven, looking for the golden hand that never came. The advent for which all creation waits, the beautiful visage of eternity that shall appear upon the roads of time.
Thank you. France.
Yet still to ourselves we say the kindling face, oh, surely one day we shall come to our kind. One day we shall create our life anew and utter the magic formula of peace and bring perfection to the scheme of things. One day we shall descend to life and earth, living the sacrifice of the eternal world into a world that cries to him for help and bring the truth that sets the spirit free. The joy that is the baptism of the soul. The strength that is the outstretched arm of love. One day we shall lift this beauty's dreadful veil, repose the light of the world's beating heart, and bear the secret body of light and bliss.
Mm, thank you. Will you read?
But this thing to which an unknown God, there is no end of seeking and of birth. There is no end of dying and return. The life that wins passes greater age. The life that fails and dies must live again. Till it has found itself, it cannot cease. All must be done for which life and death were made. But we shall say that even then is rest, or there repose and action are the same, in the deep place of God's supreme delight. In a high state where ignorance is no more, each movement is a wave of peace and bliss. Repose grows motionless, fear defaults, action a rhythm in the infinite, and birth a gesture of eternity. A sound of transfiguration still can shine, and night can bear its crown of mystic light. The self-canceling, self-affecting paradox into a self-luminous mystery that change. They embroider into a joyful miracle that God would be visible and here take a shape. This cross would be the spirit's identity. Life would reveal a true immortal face.
Thank you. Penny.
But now a termless labor is her fate in its recurrent decimal of events. Birth, death, our ceaseless iteration points, the old question mark margins each finished page, each volume of her efforts history, a limping yes through the eon's journey still, accompanied by an eternal no. All seems in vain, yet endless is the game. In passive turns, the ever-circling wheel. Life has no issue. Death brings no release. A prisoner of itself, the being lives and keeps its futile immortality. Extinction is denied. Its soul escapes. An error of the gods has named the world. For indifferent, the eternal watches time.
Thank you. So this is the mystery that Swapati has set out to solve. He still has a long way to go. We can go back to where we stopped at the beginning of this section on page 195, where Sri Aurobindo sums up the problem. Would you like to read? Page 195 at the break.
Here's the gap.
Here is the gap. Yeah.
Here's the gap. Here stops or thin light force.
This deficit
offers the magnificent skills. This one makes all the rest seem thin and bare. A half time draw the horizon of her acts. Her deeds remember what she came to do. But the mind has forgotten all the hard mistakes. In nature's endless line, is lost before.
Thank you. Anything to ask or share?
This is here. First one, here is the gap.
Here is the gap. What he's described, no, that something is missing. The great God given him. You know, she does all these other marvels, but that thing, the thing that the spirit came to do, the music that the self-embodying spirit came to play, that is missing. Only we get occasionally a murmur of it, or a moment's touch of beauty. No. And those things remind us of that strength and sweetness that is missing. that we're all missing, that we're all longing for, really. And we try to make up for that missing music or delight with all the other things that that life offers us. But this is the gap. That one thing is missing. Life's force doesn't seem to be able to give it to us. So however great her enchantment, they are poor. A pauper is somebody who has nothing. No? This want makes all the rest seem thin and bare.
And the gap is in the God-given
room. It's lost. Yes, what's missing, yeah. So what did she really come to do, or what did the spirit come to do? Well, it's life, in fact. Next sentence. Will you read, please?
In love, to summon omniscience, in essence, to hear the omnipotent, the creator here was her heart's consent, to invent the cosmic sin to which her utter God, trying to transform the street far from sleep into an all of the sleep and defund into an utterance of the ineffable. She will bring the glory here of the absolute truth. Sent forward into creation's breathing extreme, marrying the sky of calm, the sea of beauty, the fire to call eternity into time, let world serve and read it and the soul, ask she would live to never hurt with heaven, lovers life to regret in the supreme and reconcile the eternal and values.
Thank you. So life wants to be divine. She wants to express all knowledge in our knowledge, in our action to express the all-powerful. She wants to create her creator here in the material world. That was her concept, her conceit. Conceit, of course, it has a double suggestion. Not only this was her idea, but this was her over-ambition. We could say her conceit, to invade the cosmic scene, the universal scene, with utter God. This was the aspiration of life when she left her perfect heavens and poured herself into the material world. And she's still trying to do it, toiling, working very hard to transform the still, far, absolute into an all-fulfilling epiphany. Epiphany is when the divine reveals himself fully into an utterance of the ineffable, an expression of what can never be expressed. She wants to bring here the glory of the absolute's form. She wants to change this poise, this balance, into something dynamic, into creation's rhythmic swing, to marry with a sky of calm, a sea of bliss. Her aspiration is like a fire to call eternity down into time, to make the joy of the body as vivid and intense as the joy of the soul. She wants to lift earth up very close to heaven. She's laboring to equate, to make life equal with the Supreme and reconcile, bring into a harmony the eternal and the abyss, two ends of the cosmos. Let's read just the nectar sentence, Ganga Lakshmi.
Of pragmatism or the transcendent fill silence with the voice of the heart, but in the cry the single voice is lost. For nature, vision
climbs
beyond her heart. A life of God in heaven she sees above. A demigod emerging from an ape.
An ape.
Is all shed in our
Thank you.
What this means, ape?
An ape is a monkey. A primate. Yeah. So that's us, demigods emerging from the ape.
But for example, when you tell monkey in English, from the ape, is the same.
Well, as Don says, an ape is it's a more comprehensive word. It expresses all the primates. Monkeys are small. Apes can be very big, like gorillas.
Sorry?
The
ape does have a tail. No tail.
The apes don't have a tail. Okay, thank you. Thank you. That's the difference.
Like a chimpanzee or a gorilla. Yes,
so we have passed through that primate stage, no? Lost our tails and our fur. So some kind of demigod, half divine being. That's all she can manage in our mortal element in this world that dominated by death. Here, her highest achievement is the hero, the half god, the half titan. That's her peak.
What is the meaning of the cry? Yeah, but in the cry, the singing voice is
not. Yes, it says that we read about everything that she's attempting to do and wanting to do, and then in a practical way, her pragmatism of the transcendent truth fills the silence of the universe with the voices of the gods, in a way. But in all that noise, all those voices, that single voice, that God-given hymn, is lost. Nature's vision climbs beyond her act. She can see and aspire for more than she can achieve. She envisions above, or she sees above, this life of gods in heaven. That's what life should be. But this human being, this demigod emerging from an ape, that's all she can. That's all she can manage in our mortal element.
Sri Aurobindo speaks of this hymn,
the hymn, yes.
Yes, and then he describes it again, as God given him, which escapes her art, as on the line 787. This is so beautiful, a silent word awake in some...
Yes, It's just waiting. A murmur suspended in eternity's hush. That's it. Yeah, about another 250 pages we have to go before the promise of the fulfillment comes, before Asvapati's part of the drama is fulfilled. So let's listen to Mother reading some line from this. So where did we stop? 832. This beautiful little flower, I don't know whether you can see it. It's called collective aspiration. I don't remember Mother's comment about it, but anyway, something special and important.
Only collective aspiration is only possible with the divine.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.